Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
That's tapped away, back into the wall again. Kept in with Shannon tipping it around behind the goal. Again, out in front of the door! Hammered into the net, cutting around in front, and the Buffalo Sabres on the goal from Holzinger have taken the lead early here in the first period. Groshek in over the line, looking for Barnaby. Groshek on the spot! Barnaby can't connect. The score! Following up on the play, Zibnik. Zibnik picks it up and blasts it home before Tugnut could get set. And the Buffalo Sabres increase the margin to 2-0. Back in and take a hit from Pitlick. And back in the corner. Back in front. Sabres increase their margin to 3-0 with 4:16 remaining on the clock. Hutch knocked out and the Sabres come up with the puck. Ronan. Turning at center ice, the buzzer goes and the Buffalo Sabres have come up with a huge victory here in the Corral Center to send this series to a deciding game.
And Steve Shields with his first NHL shutout. And it was a dandy here tonight in Ottawa. A clutch performance by Shields and his teammates as the Sabres win it in style here against the Senators and force Game 7 Tuesday night at Marine Midland Arena.
One time in Sabres history, they have rallied from a 3-2 series deficit with Game 6 on the road to propel it to 7 and win it there. We all know that Derek Plant ultimately would be the hero in 1997, Buffalo's lone Game 7 win. But Marty Baron, as we venture into a Friday episode of Sabres Live here, it's all about Game 6 first because of what transpired last night in Game 5. Your sober second thought on what was the turning point last night that allowed Montreal to take the series lead?
My sober second morning quarterback, whatever thought is, we got to figure out the top line, right? Obviously, like Montreal's figured it out. Suzuki, Caulfield, they're going now, and it feels like, you know, Thompson has gotten his points. He's got 11 points in 11 playoff games. It's mm-hmm. point a game. But in moments where that line needs to get going, we haven't seen it. And now I know Lindy Ruff has been patient and has made a couple of tweaks with the forward lines, but nothing with the Thompson line. Today they're not practicing. Tomorrow they're going to have a morning skate. Get ready for, you know, a game 6 Saturday night in Montreal. But I feel like you have to take apart the Thompson line and start anew. I know it's very risky. But what's the alternative? You've given it time and time again. You have to figure out the Thompson line and give Tage new life on that line.
They may not take the morning skate tomorrow. More from Lindy coming up as he addressed the media this morning before he and the team and you head to Montreal with Dan for Game 6 tomorrow. Obviously, we'll have the big watch party here at KeyBank Center. Can't wait for that. More on that coming up. Shayna Goldman. Her Friday slot is going to be filled later today as we look forward to hearing her evaluation of the series so far and also what has now been set in the West, and that is a Vegas-Colorado conference final. To the point of the line, Thompson, Tuck, Krebs, I think Tuck is probably garnering even more of the attention at this point in
time. Right now, yes.
For the drop-off in production from round one against Boston to round two. And I guess on the heels of a game four win, it's maybe a little surprising to me that we're now right back where we started the week. And that mm-hmm. was, how do you maximize the forward contributions here? And as we discussed earlier in the week, my changing of the lines would have started with the deconstruction of the McLeod line. And
yes,
that did happen, obviously, as McLeod went down to a fourth line role in game four and was there last night.
And it worked.
The line had an awful lot, I thought. But now it does appear that there needs to be more in the way of a shakeup. Do you have in your head, what you want for Thompson's wingers at this point in time? Because there's obviously, it's kind of strange. You're sitting here after a Game 5 loss thinking, well, Konstantelos' line was pretty good. And even, they were on for one against, I get it, but they still outscored their opponent 2-1. And the Norris line still is heavy, heavy, heavy ozone time with great work by Doan and Benson. So I feel like you already used this word a little risky at this point in time just to try to get Tage going or talk. What's the approach then?
Well, it's funny because the deconstruction of the McLeod line has worked because Hellenius has come in and played really well. And now Zucker got his first of the playoffs. And maybe Quinn's still not producing, especially goals. But, I think that line has had a better look, a better energy. So that has worked. Now, for me, it's a very simple solution. And we've talked about it. And we've had, these kind of lines that have been submitted on social media to us at Sabres Live on X. And Norris had so many chances early in the second period. I can think of three chances. Yeah. One where Benson gave it to him in a low play, another in the slot. And Josh Norris has not scored and has not produced in that way. So I would say, okay, let's make the swap. Let's make the center swap. Let's go Norris. You're going to go with Tuck and Krebs, and let's see if that worked. But ultimately, let's put Benson and Doan with Thompson and continue the duo that Doan and Benson have been able to create with the energy. And let's have Tage in the middle there to hopefully get going. Look, the people are talking. They're like, is Tage injured? He was a little short answering that question, last week. But at the end of the day, Tage played over 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. He's taking faceoffs. He's doing a lot of the things that you would think a healthy player is doing. So let's give him Benson and Doan, and let's give him all the chances to succeed and have an impact game in game 6. Right now, it's still just rolling the dice for me with Krebs and Tux. And it could be good if everybody plays their best, but you're at the Krebs table, you're hoping for a specific number, and I think you would give yourself a lot more of a chance to get Tage going if you add him with Benson and Doan.
Are you surprised by the end result based on how the first period went last night and the two teams combining for 5 goals in a 10.5-minute stretch? And the Sabres holding a 3-2 lead through one and well into the second period.
I'm not surprised. I'm surprised because I thought, okay, it's 3-2. Now you lock it down. Now you got that first period where you're like, hey, you know what? Let's be careful here. We can't get into these track meets with the Montreal Canadiens. They're gonna be able to score goals. And I'm surprised that Dobesh was able to find his game the way that he did in the second period and on, especially after a really bad first period. But I also put that on the Sabres. You push Dobesh back in his net. You look at all the goals the Sabres have scored in the first period. Dobesh is well inside the blue paint, and you have net front presence, and you have everybody right in front of him. Where was that net front presence? Where was the push back on Dobesh? Dobesh was able to play his game and be aggressive again. So I'm surprised on a lot of fronts. The one thing I shouldn't be surprised is the Sabres did hang on. I'm not going to say hang on for dear life, but they did hang on with 27 block shots, and Montreal had all the push in game 4, and Buffalo hung on. When you play that way, you're going to crack. You're going to open up the door. Look at what Colorado did to Minnesota the night before. They're down 3-0. They're down 3-1 with 4 minutes left. They were pushing. Minnesota did not have anything in the third period, but pretty much in the second half of the game. So comebacks happen. teams score goals, and this league is a league of comebacks. Now, Montreal was pushing. They got their lead, and then Buffalo pushed in the third period, but I didn't feel like it was a sustained push. I think there was more frustrated push by Buffalo. There was more frustrations to that.
Well, I mean, the first minute of the third period, though, could have written an entirely different script. Dahlin was denied. Benson just went wide on a chance. This is all in the first minute. And then, you know, again,
Slafkovský hit a post in the first minute, too.
Well, yeah,
so you're
like,
they got their look.
Right. He you know, it really could have deflated the Sabres after that opening minute had Slafkovský scored on that 2-on-1.
Yep.
At the end of the day, you have two penalties that that become lightning rods as well, based on, you know, what transpired in Game 4 and the penalties. Really, this series, it's been this way. You know, just the timing, the nature of some of the penalties, and unfortunately for Buffalo, it was Thompson and Dahlin that got called for them. Thompson's obviously was considered to be one that was really not related to a play. You know, Dahlin was in the process of defending when the stick got where it got in a cross-checking manner, and, you know, it is what it is. But Montreal's power play proved to be, you know, pretty awesome once again. I'm looking at this and wondering, you know, just how you, well, I mean, we started by talking about lines, obviously, so that's 5-on-5, and that's going to, you know, generate the most. But do you make lineup changes now based, like, meaning insert players in here to help either of the special team situation or to specifically help 5-on-5? Like, you know, the beauty of having such a great regular season from December 9th on is you had a lot of key contributors, but you also had a lot of efficient contributors across the board. Do you think it makes sense to bring in a Metsä or a Carrick or a whomever at this point in time?
Well, I depending on how Carrick is feeling, obviously, we know that, you know, he wasn't feeling great. And after his game back, he only had played 6 minutes. I think it's asking a lot of Sam Carrick to come in and have an impact, maybe play 12, 13, 14 minutes, penalty kill, whatever, big face-offs. It's hard.
But what about Tanner Pearson?
Tanner Pearson is maybe more, I don't want to say likely, because, okay, well, who is Tanner Pearson coming in for?
Right.
Are you
going to
take Jordan Greenway out? You're not taking Beck Malenstein out.
Right.
Are you taking Peyton Krebs out? He's on your top line. But if you reconfigure the lines, does that open up the door? But where is Tanner Pearson coming in from? And now we got to, you know, wait and see about Owen Power, who did play a couple of shifts after going into the boards and his leg completely twisted. But you never know what that's like the next day or 48 hours later. And if you don't have Owen Power, then are you saying, well, we're bringing Kesselring again? Are we bringing Logan Stanley? Are we making a change anyway? Because, you know, the penalty kill isn't where we need it to be. There's a lot of those discussions. But at the same time, you got to weigh in. Somebody that hasn't played in 3-4 weeks compared to somebody that has been in the lineup, but maybe not at its best. So those are the debates that you're going to have within the coach's room. I don't know that I'm making a change other than changing the lines.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm making a roster change, bringing in somebody else. I think I've got to change the lines the way they're configured before thinking somebody else is going to come in. You don't have anybody that, like, Austin's not coming back. Yuri Kulik's not coming back. You don't have anybody that could come in and maybe give you that boost in offense. But again, it comes down to, are you going to be able to defend? Are you going to be able to defend Montreal in Game 6? That is going to be the biggest difference.
Well, as you heard Lindy Ruff say last night, and as we have harped on extensively, the road teams have been very good in these playoffs, including Buffalo at 4-1. Incredibly, in the Eastern Conference, home teams are 12-20 so far this postseason. 12-20 for the home team. stunning.
0-2 last night, right? When you look at the home
team. Well, no, this
team.
Is just East. So.
But I'm just East, but I'm just saying overall. And I'm lose at home, Buffalo lose at home. That's road teams in those type of games. Sometimes, like Lindy Ruff said, our road games have been very good. It's actually been better.
Yep.
But I still think the number one thing is Suzuki, Caulfield, Slafkovský, starting in the third period of game one, you saw them starting to take steps, right? Mm-hmm. And Caulfield's got 3 goals in 5 games in this series. Like, okay, you're not going to sneeze at that. Like, that line is going.
Right.
The top line for Buffalo hasn't. You've got to figure out a solution to that.
Marty, safe travels to Montreal.
Okay, I'll be watching the pregame tomorrow, Duffer.
Yes, undoubtedly you will. You might not have a choice. You'll be in the booth
with
Dan. As far as what's ahead here for the Sabres, it's tomorrow in Montreal, and then if they can secure another victory at the Bell Centre, they will be taking on Montreal back here at KeyBank Centre in Game 7 on Monday night. So that's the challenge right now, and Lindy Ruff knows exactly what lays ahead. This is the coach from earlier.
Lindy, do you have anything further on Owen Power?
He's in right now, getting treatment. And I can't, all I can offer is he said he's feeling pretty good, better than he thought he would feel. So that's encouraging.
It's to making goalie decisions, whether it's the one you made to stick with UPL or whatever decision you're going to make. Like, I'm curious what goes into that, because in your previous stint here, it wasn't something you really had to think about this time of year. Like, are you consulting with Bales on that, sports science? Like, what kind of things are you thinking about?
You know, we meet as a staff. We meet with Bales. He's part of, you know, part of the group. And, I mean, sometimes other factors can be involved with, you know, maybe one goalie's fatigued, maybe one goalie's got a little something going on. All those things come into consideration when you're going with your starting goaltender.
Lindy, some of Montreal's top guys were feeling the heat for a while there before they finally got going here. Now it's your top guys that are feeling it in terms of Tage and Tuck. But from your perspective, what are you seeing from what they're doing, and what do you need more from them?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, the execution, trying to make a difference. When you look at the game being 3-2 and, you know, Thompson walks in alone, it could have been a difference maker. I mean, he scores there, it's 4-2. We're pretty happy. You know, Krebs in the second period walked down the slot almost the same as like Boston, and, you know, we didn't put it in the back of the net. But this is the time of the year when, you know, you get the opportunities, you have to take advantage. I think you look at the big mistake we made, and, you know, we give Caulfield the back door, basically empty netter. And, you know, when a team makes a big mistake like that, you need to take advantage of it.
And we've talked about a lot about the mood and the response you guys have had throughout these playoffs. Just, you know, when you met with the team today, just what vibe did you get?
We didn't meet with the team today, just to clear that up. Team is not here.
Okay.
Team is going straight to the plane.
Just with Tage, he's had a different kind of playoffs. I mean, he's at a point a game, but he's not quite up to his offensive standard. Just how has he kind of handled this for the first time, I guess, when you look at it?
Well, it's an experience that, you know, he hasn't really gone through. I think there are momentum swings in your top players. I mean, we just mentioned Montreal's top players and long stretch of not scoring even strength, and then you'll get that opportunity to make a difference. You've got to be able to make a difference. We know this time of year there's a heightened awareness on all your top players. Every opportunity, every mistake is being critiqued. You know, we've gone through the game as coaches. There's some things we feel we can do better. There's some things we feel we can help our top guys out with. And you got to be able to put the game behind you that you just played and be ready to move on to that next one. And I looked at the start of our game. It's the start we wanted, and we made a big mistake. I thought we had them up against the wall to start with, and, you know, we made a puck decision that wasn't a good puck decision. And we created some life and momentum for them.
We've talked a lot about identity of this team and how it's revealed itself over the course of the season. This is the first in facing elimination for the first time. What do you think might reveal itself on Saturday? And, you know, what do you see? What gives you confidence that it will reveal itself in the right way?
Yeah, but because, you know, we faced a lot of adversity through the year, and you go through last year's adversity and all the stuff this year, and the team has responded almost to every challenge we've had. This is a completely different challenge. Being involved in an elimination game where now every mistake could mean the end for you. But every opportunity you get to take advantage of could mean, you know, we go on to play game seven.
Lindy, your team's facing elimination. What does this team need to do to win game six, force a game seven, and continue this season?
Yeah, we have to play on our toes. We've got to play to win. Can't be afraid. Got to play to win.
Lindy, when you address this club, the mental gymnastics of it, how much do you have to kind of live off of what you did in game four and maybe even what Tampa did in game six in the same spot in Montreal?
Yeah, you know, I think we had the right approach. You know, with the way we started the game and how well, you know, I thought we were keeping away from good opportunities in our end. The strength of our team really has been, for most of the year, has been the ability to get a lead and keep a lead. We didn't do that last night, obviously, but I think stay with your strength. I even thought the start of the third period, a couple of great opportunities, didn't take advantage of again. There was lots of opportunities inside that third period to get right back into the hockey game. But you got to make plays. And some of the plays sometimes don't turn out to be good plays. But we can't live on those plays. We got to be willing to just go all in to win a game. And I know these guys, some of the guys haven't been there before.
Lindy, you guys have been sensational with your starts, scoring first in so many of these games. What has been, or has there been a common theme as to why that hasn't been enough to propel you guys to victory in some of those?
Well, because the other team is trying real hard to score too. And I think that the other team's putting a lot of risk, and if we solve that risk, we get some good opportunities. And the opportunities were there. This is a good team we're playing. It's hard hockey. The last team we played was a good team, too. It was hard hockey. It went down to six games. I look at it right now, what is there, five teams left? To be sitting here talking to you guys, I think that this is a wonderful place to be. And I'll tell the team the same thing. We get to go to Montreal in game six in the middle of May to move on to a game seven. And I think we'll all be evaluated on what this game looks like. Just bring your best.
Pretty good feel during these playoffs for what these guys need. I'm curious why, you know, kind of what you thought when you decided not to have them come in and meet today.
Just, I know the pressure they're feeling. I know how they feel. I know how much they care. I just feel that a day away from the rink, not coming here, is a good thing. We don't need to watch video today. We don't need to talk about the game. We need to move on. There's only one game that counts now, and that is the game tomorrow. All likelihood, we may not even skate tomorrow. We'll save everything we got for tomorrow night. That's my initial thoughts right now.
In the games you've dressed two right-handed D and you've kind of rotated the pairs throughout the game, what effect might that have, you think, on like the connectivity of the two defensemen and the way they've played together?
It's pretty well what we've done all year. So it a lot of times has kept one of our top four D on the ice all the time. And then we've got that lefty-righty connection, even when we've dressed two right.
You look at the game six, it was heavy on your top four. And when you get in games like this, your best players have to be the guys that are out there playing the most, and they got to be the difference makers.
Lindy, it was clear that Dobish was on the ropes last night. Marty even talked about the decision they went through to keep him in the game. Did you sense when you had the lead there, when it was 3-2, and that pucks all of a sudden stopped going to the net and you guys weren't shooting up?
I did. We talked about it last night. We talked about it after the period that we thought we let him off the hook. We came out of the corner a couple times, and we had clear lanes to shoot pucks, and we deferred to a better play, which, you know, I think we've talked about this at length throughout the year, that sometimes, you know, our ability to make plays is we sometimes deferred to that better play. And we had the puck going to the net early. We got rewarded for it. We just didn't quite stay with it. Probably there was four or five opportunities to get a puck there quicker last night that could have kept them in chaos.
Lindy Ruff from this morning as the team heads to Montreal this afternoon, and we will continue our wraparound programming of the playoffs for the Sabres with pre- and post-game coverage tomorrow. Remember, it's an 8 o'clock start time, so that's a 7:30 pregame for us. Pat Coletta is going to be in studio with me. Marty will be on site with Dan calling the game. We'll have post-game immediately following on MSG and Sabres socials. Shayna Goldman coming up.
Sports and casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Game 6 watch party right here at KeyBank Center, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Tomorrow you can expect giveaways, discounted concessions, an awful lot more. So come join us. Watch it on the big video board. Tickets are just $5, with proceeds benefiting the Sabres Foundation. You can visit sabres.com/playoffs to learn more. Buffalo looks for another road win. They are en route to Montreal this afternoon. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic is with us as we roll on here on a Friday, Sabres Live. Can you put it into one word what you thought of last night's Game 5, Montreal and Buffalo?
Underwhelming. How about that?
Outside of the game's first 10 minutes, you mean?
Yeah, pretty. That's the thing. It was like goaltending optional. And for a second, it didn't feel like a playoff game, right? I think that's the thing with this round. It's like we're starting to get into that territory finally where it feels like these play feel like playoff games again. And then you have that back and forth, but at least it was even and mm-hmm. it was interesting. But the next 40, I would say underwhelming would be my like word of the day for the Sabres.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We just heard Lindy Ruff's, media availability from this morning, and much of it, you know, mirrored some of the initial thoughts last night after the game, passing up some opportunities in the second period when they had a chance to widen the lead. The reality is I loved an awful lot of what Montreal did. Dobish was outstanding after having a terribly shaky start to the game, and we've seen that many times in the playoffs, not through him specifically, but sometimes you just figure out a way. But I think the reoccurring concern is how does Buffalo get the best out of Thompson, Tuck, maybe even Dahlin to a certain extent here, and I'll throw in Dahlin only because it has been an enormous challenge for Buffalo to rein in Lane Hudson.
Yeah, I think Dahlin's name in there actually is completely and totally fitting. I don't think it's to the same degree as a Tuck or a Tage right now. I think they're leading the charge of the two underwhelming Sabres. But I think, too, with Dahlin, like, we know he has the capability of being legitimately a top five defenseman in the world, and he can do a little bit of everything. He can take on the heavy matchups. At the end of the year, they lightened his load a little bit. It helps free his offensive game up a bit. So there's another gear in there for sure. And I think at times you're just seeing bad habits creep in. I think they need to be a little less predictable. I think that goes for Dahlin in particular. I'm looking at those drop passes on the power play. But I think we know that he can be a lot better and a lot more disciplined too. And I think that's important here. I think puck management has been a big issue for a lot of these guys, but I would say discipline for Tage Thompson in particular. We saw it last night with that penalty that leads to a power play goal against. And with Dahlin too, just reining it in a bit more because they're getting away from what, you know, their strengths are. And we know that they can play the game in different ways, and I don't think we've seen it enough in this series.
Do you think it's wise to have significantly different forward lines in game six facing elimination? Because as you can imagine, the discussion about trying to get the best out of Thompson and Tuck may depend on switching other lines, and we will talk extensively about Benson's contributions here coming up based on your most recent article at The Athletic. But like, so for example, even though we're seeing Benson, Doan, shift after shift, creating, do you put them around Thompson at this point? Like, how do you view what Buffalo should do with their forwards tomorrow?
It's tricky because sometimes you don't want to, you know, break what isn't broken. And that line has consistently been the best line. But I think you can make a good argument to actually split up Doan and Benson and kind of spread the wealth across the top six a bit more. And I think in the regular season, we saw them do that a lot. I think that, you know, you could up their usage and try it that way. And listen, if it doesn't work, go back to the combination you know works and go for it. Say it's offensive zone face-off or even a defensive zone face-off, because we know that, you know, Doan and Benson are two of the best at getting the puck back and then driving play up the ice. You could have shifts where you throw them back together as long as you don't completely, you know, jumble the lines and then keep it going the entire game, that nobody can get into that flow and rhythm. And that's going to be the balancing act that the coaches have to have. But I would say that if you can just split them apart and let them be two different spark plugs, that two different lines have that kind of similar skill set, the puck retrievals, the puck battles, the takeaway ability, the high-end passing, the ability to drive to the net, all of these little things that add up to those big moments that we're seeing when they're on the ice, I think that could be a great thing to have. Like, Tage Thompson at his core is an unbelievable shooter. We know that. Okay, get him someone who can get him the puck. Maybe the answer is Benson. And the good news is they all have regular season experience playing together. Yes. So it's not like you're just going to the board and saying, let's throw all things together and hope it sticks. You're not. So I would say just split them apart for now. Have Norris and one of these wingers be in the top six, and then have Tage and another one of these wingers as that line across from them.
Yeah, the crazy part has been the puck luck, lack thereof, perhaps for Norris, because he couldn't ask for more than what he's getting from the wingers that he's playing with right now in Benson and Doan. And so you do have to give Josh a fair amount of credit here, I think. Like, when you have these sustained shifts and opportunities consistently, it's three people along with the defense that are making this happen. But last night was like It summed up perfectly how frustrating this has been for Norris since the regular season ended. He has the one goal. It was an empty netter against Boston. We love our empty netters, but still, like, he had chance after chance after chance in that second period last night. Some were blocked, some were misses, you know, and then when you tie it in with Tage, and we've seen McLeod, you know, moved down in the lineup, maybe a little bit of a back up at the end of last night, but that's not the production you were getting the entire season down the middle, right?
Right, exactly. And listen, if you go by the cliches we all hear, center depth wins championships. And it can, right? Like, it totally can. You look at that Colorado-Minnesota series and you look at it and go, the difference between the center of the ice is so glaring. And sometimes you can make up for that if you have amazing wingers, right? And in Norris's case, what he doesn't convert on, some of his line mates do. And I think it's important here. That's why you can't just like completely abandon ship and be like, all right, Josh Norris, you're on your own to navigate these ships. Like, absolutely not. I think he needs one of these guys, and that's his best chance of breaking through. And sometimes you just get that lucky bounce and you get the confidence back. And you were saying they're not getting the luck. That's a part of it. But you definitely need more from your centers in this case too, because it's not like we can go line by line and be like, well, those are elite wingers, right? Like, you look at the one line and go, those wingers can carry a center if they're not playing well enough, but not everybody can do that. Not everybody is doing it right now. So you have to find a way to maximize the centers a little bit better and just look for those complementary matchups up front, because they have them. They have different combinations they know they can lean on. And that's why moving McLeod down, you go, okay, that could work on the fourth line. Maybe that'll help them get into the zone with control a little bit more. He's good with the zone entries, and you try to pair up the skill sets. I think he could probably jump up in the lineup a little bit more here, and you just try to find new things to make it click.
We'll get around the NHL in a moment here with Shayna, but we definitely want to really dive in as deep as you did in your most recent article about, you know, kind of future best and worst case for a couple of standouts this postseason. One would be Stankoven for Carolina. The other would be Benson for Buffalo. And for the sake of time, we can leave Stan Coven's part of this article out of the equation and focus on just what you're seeing with Benson and the, you know, the numbers, the eye test, and the future outlook here now that his production has risen to the level that it has been regular season and playoffs.
So this was fun because beginning of the postseason, these were two of, I think it was four potential playoff breakouts I had written about that had, you know, good signs. And it's not just that you're like pulling it out of a hat, right? Like you look at these playoff breakouts and you go, what are they doing in the regular season that leads to this moment? And now how does their game translate to this moment? Because that doesn't always happen. You could think about like a Wyatt Johnston a couple years ago in Dallas's first postseason, great regular season, doesn't add up. Next year, he learns he's better. So the fact that someone like Benson is doing this in postseason number one is even more impressive, but it's just everything that he did right in the regular season on display and now magnified on the national stage. This is someone that we know has those third line skill sets, the grinding ability, right? The puck retrievals, the board battles, the ability to just be pesky with his stick at all times, every single shift. And he's also solid defensively. So all of that makes that third line profile. Then you add in the high-end skill, and I think his smarts. I don't think he gets enough credit for that because we don't always associate that, I guess, with this kind of like pesky role either. Mm-hmm. But he's someone who reads plays really well to spot the right trigger points, to know when to pounce at these opportunities without taking too much risk, and also how to create his own trigger points when they're not as obvious in the moment. Put it all together with the playmaking and how he can see things offensively. And it just makes for someone who's been a super productive top six player. And now he's doing it in the big moments. So it's an extension of his regular season. And then some of his comps, the Seth Jarvises of the world, right? Like that stood out to me, number one, because, you know, back when we did Player Tiers, we had someone tell us like, that's someone, you know, they're pesky players who play the game the way it should be played. And it was Hagel and Jarvis who kept getting those mentions. And now you have Doan and Benson, who it's like they could be this little light combo. With Jarvis, he's a comp because of the physical attributes, his size, his weight, his height. But it's also the way he played when he was that age, how often he shot the puck, the scoring numbers, the two-way impacts. And those are incredibly similar here. So if that's the path that Benson's going to be on and his regular season points to it and his playoffs are now just adding weight, that's really exciting. I know we hear Brad Marchand thrown out as a comp all the time, and it makes a lot of sense because it's that rat mentality, right? But he also, like, he's a rat, he's a dog. You could put all the words together, right? It's all the same. But Marchand didn't hit this level this early in his career. So it'll be interesting to see if Benson stays on this path. I imagine in 2 years, the numbers will line up a little bit more in terms of similarity score, but I think we know that's a very strong comp for him too.
Well, the Sabres did extend Doan earlier this year. What do you think Benson's next contract looks like, given that he does need one this summer?
So his market value right now on average for, I think, the next 7 years is $10.1 million a year. According to Dom's model, RFAs don't make that money, right? So even with the current cap world, which is a lot of players are getting paid more, especially by teams to keep them because it's that much harder to bring in high-end talent. The best way to do is through the draft and development. And also now these are going to be Benson's peak years. Still don't think he gets that. Most RFAs don't. But I think that $7 million range could be the sweet spot here. And I think that would, you know, deliver surplus value throughout the life of the contract.
Well, Game 6 happens tomorrow. Benson and company in Montreal. Sabres trying to force a Game 7 back here on Monday. Anybody hear from Tortorella yet after Vegas won last night?
It's always funny, the outrage of these moments. And while I understand it here, right, like the media has a job to do, the fans should want to hear from the coach, and this is a national spotlight, massive moment, and it's actually a good one. It's not like, hey, they were eliminated and he won't speak. It's funnier to me to see the reactions than the moment itself.
Well, I'm not sure I loved him not shaking hands. That was a little, you know.
Below Paul Maurice coded. I guess maybe that's why he skipped the media, so he doesn't have to go on his long rants of why he doesn't believe coaches should be in the handshake line.
Yeah. Well, this will be the second time we have ever seen Vegas and Colorado go head-to-head in the playoffs. It happened in 2021. Colorado won the first two. Vegas won the next four. Ironically, the Avs would win the Cup the next year, and then Vegas would win the Cup the next year. So who knows why it played out that particular way. Do you think that this is now much, much harder matchup for the Avalanche than what we would have been saying 6 weeks ago if it was Colorado and Vegas.
Yeah, absolutely. Vegas looks like the team we expected them to be. You're seeing all of this two-way talent click. Plus, there's the return of William Karlsson, which has been absolutely massive for them. And I think also now we have
Stone simultaneously.
Yes. But we also have the confirmation that Mitch Marner can play in the playoffs and he couldn't do it before and all of that drama. But I think it's a fascinating stylistic matchup, especially when you go back to those playoff series. That 2021 series to me was this turning point for the Avs because Vegas won by standing them up in the neutral zone, right? And that was the moment a lot of people could point to say, see, a rush-based style doesn't work in the postseason. You can't play that way. And a lot of teams in that moment would have just completely changed their game to be like, we now need to be what, say, the Florida Panthers are today, of that grinding style to make it in that kind of environment. And the Avs went, we got to get better at that style too, but also we're going to be the best rush team out there. So no one's going to stop us in transition. They were able to dominate the next postseason and build towards this moment where they look like that dominant force again. I think this is a more well-rounded team than it was in 2021. I think we're seeing the depth. We're seeing the ability to just forecheck and take control. And the bottom six has been absolutely huge for the Avs. But also the high-end skill is just as good, if not better, right? And obviously the health of Makar is going to be an interesting this one. And the fact that he gets rest is huge here. But MacKinnon and Natchez, who another guy, is showing what a great player he can be in a postseason environment. Like, they are the better team in this moment. But it'll be interesting to see, like, does their power play match up well to a pesky Vegas penalty kill that's been able to generate shorthanded looks? Like, who's to say that could be a turning point in this series? And, you know, neither team has, oh my God, amazing goaltending. So how much are those two-way strengths going to matter here?
Who does have the better goaltending real quick?
Oh, absolutely. Colorado every day of the week. I think they have two better options here.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, obviously, Hart has been stable for Vegas here to get them this far along, and now what a matchup ahead. It'll start on Wednesday. Vegas and Colorado in the Western Conference Final. Shayna, enjoy the weekend. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic, our regular here on Fridays on Sabres Live. We'll wrap up and get you set for Game 6 when we come back.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Friendly reminder, we have our jersey auction ongoing from this 25-26 campaign. You can bid on the black and red jerseys worn by your favorites this year. All proceeds benefit the Sabres Foundation. The auction is open until Sunday night at 9 p.m. So place your bids today at sabres.com/auction. We're getting set for Game 6 tomorrow, Buffalo, Montreal. The Worlds are underway in Switzerland. Former Sabres, of course, involved. Team USA looking to defend last year's win. Canada has defeated Sweden to open the tournament. Tavares and Ryan O'Reilly had the opening goals of the game. Dylan Cousins also scored. That was part of a 5-3 Canada win over Sweden. Finland also won earlier today over Germany, and it's worth noting and celebrating if you like good people in the game. Sasha Barkov was suiting up for Finland after missing the entire NHL season. The Panthers captain did factor in with an assist in Finland's win over Germany. USA Switzerland, the host nation. That happens about an hour and change from now. So, all that being said, we are gearing up for Game 6 tomorrow in Montreal. There have been some very memorable Game 6 wins in Sabres franchise history. You only have to go back 20 years, because we've done this a lot this year, Reunion Night team, the 05-06 squad, and the win in overtime on home ice against Carolina to force a seventh game. Granted, there have been many Game 6 wins on home ice and very few in this situation on the road. That's why we started the show with what we did. 1997, Buffalo was able to go into Ottawa, take Game 6 because of Steve Shields and his stunning performance, and ultimately win in Game 7 on home ice. I think the Sabres, as you know, clearly comfortable on the road this postseason. The opportunity lays ahead after no skate today to just go in with a clean mindset tomorrow and try to win again and bring it back home for Game 7 on Monday. We'll see you then. Pre-game coverage begins Saturday night at 7:30.